Olympism is a philosophy of life, exalting and combining in a balanced whole the qualities of body, will, and mind. Blending sport with culture and education, Olympism seeks to create a way of life. Olympic Charter, Fundamental Principle Number 1. My name is Becca Ryswick, and you're listening to So That's What Happened, a podcast where I share some of my favorite stories. History is full of engaging and fascinating topics, whether we go back to the dawn of time or only a few years ago. So settle in as we explore one of my favorites. After a year of waiting, the 2020 Tokyo Summer Games have begun. To celebrate, I thought we could talk a bit about the Olympics. Like many people, I have fond memories of watching the Olympics as a child, making up my own gymnastics routines in the basement and trying and horrendously failing to mimic the athletes on the TV. We all have our favorite events, our favorite athletes. Mine happened to be fairly exclusive to the Winter Games, but as I said, gymnastics does hold a special interest for me. If you were thinking that we will be learning about the origins of the Olympics today, you're partly right. Of course, we'll touch on the original Olympics, but I don't want to stay there. Instead, after a quick overview of the ancient games, we're going to jump ahead briefly to the beginning of the modern-day Olympics in Athens in 1896, and finally end with some of the odd and inspirational stories to come out of the Olympics. As described by Olympics.com, the Olympic Games is a quadrennial international multi-sport event celebrated as a global sports festival by people all over the world. The Olympic Games are held in both the summer and winter, with the ultimate goal of cultivating people and world peace through sports. Summed up, the Olympics are an attempt to create a common ground, something familiar that people the world over can relate to. Common ground is important, and I'd say the history of the Games speaks for itself when it comes to the question of whether this global sports festival has been able to cultivate any sense of peace. A prime example is the 2018 Winter Games, in which North and South Korea marched together under a unified flag. Of course, this moment didn't magically fix all their problems, but it did serve as a symbol of what could be. But the Olympics weren't always about world community or peace. At its heart, the ancient Olympic Games was a religious festival held in a religious sanctuary. Paul Christensen explains on Olympics.com. You see, the original games were held in the city of Olympia, which was believed to be the domain of Zeus, a place he apparently claimed by hurling a lightning bolt from Mount Olympus. The site goes on to say, from the first edition in 776 BC until 550 BC, the games took place among the sanctuary itself. The sacred olive tree of Zeus, from which the victory wreaths were cut, marked the finishing line for all races. Eventually, Olympia became a gathering place for anyone in ancient Greece who wished to attract a crowd. Artists, speakers, craftsmen, they all came to Olympia to display their talents. The athletes too remained in Olympia to train, and by the time of the Romans, the city was quite the tourist attraction. Alas, the Romans would be the death knell for the Olympic Games. In 393, the Christian emperor, Theodosius I, brought an end to all pagan festivals, and seeing as the Olympics were held in honor of Zeus, they came to an end. The games soon became history. It took 1,500 years for them to make their comeback and enter the modern era. In 1892, Baron Pierre de Coubertin of France was passionate about promoting physical education. After visiting the site of the old Olympic Games, he was inspired to revive the tradition. In 1894, he was able to found the International Olympic Committee, which still governs the modern-day Games. And finally, in 1896, the first modern Olympics were held in Athens, Greece. There were 280 athletes competing in 43 events that year. Here's a quick fun fact for you. Every 4 years, also known as an Olympiad, have been numbered, even when there were no games that took place that year. Another fun fact, the 5 interlocking rings used as a symbol of the Olympics is meant to represent the continents of North and South America, Asia, Africa, Europe, and Australia. I know, that is 6 continents, and there are only 5 rings. However, the 2 Americas are considered one. While the first revival of the Olympic Games was successful, and it continued forward, it didn't become truly popular until the 1924 Paris Games. 3,000-odd athletes competed, and the closing ceremony was introduced, along with the first Winter Games. It wasn't until 1994 that the Summer and Winter Games became staggered. Part of the success of this event can be related back to World War I, which had ended only several years before. It offered something for people to get excited about, and provided a way for countries to engage one another on friendly terms after the pain surrounding the Great War. Of course, we then had World War II in the 40s, and the 1940 and 1944 games were canceled. This seems like a good place to move into the stories. Let's start with what I think is probably the weirdest event to ever take place in the history of the modern Olympics. That would be the 1904 marathon in St. Louis. This was the first time the U.S. would host the Olympics, and it was a bit of a disaster. At the same time the Olympics were going on, the World's Fair was also being held in St. Louis. This was at a time before the Olympics had really taken off in terms of popularity, so more people were interested in the World's Fair, where there were sports events as well. The standout from this mess, though, was the marathon. The competitors were a mix of experienced marathon runners, middle-distance runners, and a handful of, well, as the Smithsonian Magazine puts it, oddities. The article, "The 1904 Olympic Marathon May Have Been the Strangest Ever," by Karen Abbott, lists the oddities as 10 Greeks who had never run a marathon, 2 men of the Tsuana tribe of South Africa who were in St. Louis as part of the South African World's Fair exhibit and who arrived at the starting line barefoot, and a Cuban national and former mailman named Felix Carvajal, who raised money to come to the States by demonstrating his running prowess throughout Cuba, once trekking the length of the island. Upon his arrival in New Orleans, he lost all his money on a dice game and had to walk and hitchhike to St. Louis. If the roster of competitors wasn't enough, the marathon itself was something of a mess as well. The track was 24.85 miles and consisted of 7 hills with a 100 to 300 foot climb, roads covered in inches of dust, dodging traffic since the roads had not been closed, and only 2 places for the athletes to get water at the 6-mile mark and again at the 12th. Apparently the organizer, James Sullivan, thought an Olympic marathon would be the perfect place to test the effects of purposeful dehydration. On top of all of that, the coaches and trainers would drive alongside the runners, kicking up dust. It was an all-around brutal race. William Garcia of California nearly became the first fatality in an Olympic marathon when all the dust he was inhaling coated his esophagus and caused internal bleeding. Dehydration was rampant, by design, and some athletes gave up, too sick or exhausted to continue. Len Tao of South Africa was actually chased off by dogs at one point. Felix, the Cuban mailman, stole peaches from a passing motorist, found an orchard and stopped to eat some apples, and then took a nap to recover from cramps from eating rotten apples. The first reported case of drug use in the modern Olympics also happened in this race when Thomas Hicks's team gave him strychnine and egg whites. We even have one man, Fred Lors, hitching a ride in a car and then waving at the other racers as he passed them by. After riding 11 miles, he crossed the finish line first, was declared the winner until someone pointed out that he was a cheat. Fred claimed he had never intended to accept the medal and was just having a joke. In the end, a listless and hallucinating Thomas Hicks was assisted by his trainers over the finish line to claim the gold. On the more inspirational side, I have an individual and one team I'd like to very briefly touch on. We'll start with the team, since I've covered them before, the Jamaican bobsled team. They debuted in the 1988 Calgary Games, and while they have not won any medals, they have inspired the world with their passion and determination. If you'd like to learn more about them, I did an episode about the true story behind Cool Runnings a few months ago. Another name that will pop up whenever you're looking for inspiration on anything with the Olympics is that of Jesse Owens. In choosing to compete in the 1936 Berlin Games, Jesse was actually branded as un-American for not supporting the boycott of the games being held in the heart of Nazi Germany. Jesse went on to win 4 gold medals that year, a new record, and experienced a rather confusing mix of accolades and racism, including an acknowledgement of his accomplishments from Hitler to being unable to enter the Waldorf Astoria, New York, through the front door. In truth, Jesse Owens' story is one that deserves a longer look, and I may be coming back to it someday. If you'd like to learn more about the Olympics, their website, olympics.com, is a treasure trove of information, as well as a great place to watch the events. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating and reviewing it, as well as subscribing and sharing. If you'd like to directly help me, you can head over to patreon.com/sothatswhathappened or click the link in the show notes. If you have any topics you'd like to hear me cover or questions or comments about this or past stories, send an email to sothatswhathappenedpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find me over on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook as STWHpodcast. The most important thing in the Olympic Games is not to win, but to take part. Just as the most important thing in life is not the triumph, but the struggle. The essential thing is not to have conquered, but to have fought well. The Olympic creed.